Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Bebop Banter, the internet's premier anime podcast, where I want to start again. We've done it pretty much every episode by thanking everybody for listening, by thanking all of the new listeners, the old listeners. This is why I don't cut Demetrius off like I did last time. I felt bad about that. But we are pushing some big numbers, so we just want to thank you all before we start. Let your friends know, let your family members know, let anyone you know. We're growing the community here, and it's looking good. But who are we? I mean, if you've listened to us before, you probably know, but for our brand new listeners, we are Bebop Banter. My name is Wes, and I'm also joined by my co-host. I mentioned him earlier, Demetrius.
I'm just getting started, darling.
And Saeed.
I got a cool fall wallpaper from Wallpaper Engine I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, Saeed has the fancy PC now that does all the crazy active wallpapers custom for every season. But it's not fall yet, I don't think, right?
Nah, September's close enough.
Technically.
Close.
Like next week.
We're close.
We're in sweater. We're almost in sweater weather. Almost.
Yeah, you know, lots of new series, lots of new manga series starting as some get axed. About to transition to a new anime season, which is going to be exciting here soon. And we promised it before, and we're going to hop right into it right now. We have a brand new kind of, well, we had a brand new live action anime that we did a spoiler-free reaction to. Check that episode out before. And it's finally time to get into the spoilers of it. What series is it? It's One Piece, the Netflix live action adaptation. Again, check out the episode before where we react to it spoiler-free, having not finished it. But in this episode, all three of us have finished it. And all three of us have some thoughts that we have not yet discussed with each other. So this is going to be a really, really good time. Before we have that good time, though, everybody, you can follow us on Instagram, where we're most active, at Bebop Banter. And you can click the link tree in our bio to figure out how to support us. There are two main ways. The first way, go to killthecrooks.com, use code BEBOT15, get yourself some anime-inspired street merch. And Demetrius, what is the second way that people can support us?
The second way is you can go to our Patreon, which is also in that link tree, and support us in our different tiers that already has some exclusive content with more on the way.
And I feel like me in particular, I've been saying it's coming for a while. And we do have a lot of ideas cooked up. And it is coming. So you might want to get in on that before a lot of it starts dropping. But now with the thank yous and the kind of plugs on how you can support the show out of the way and the introductions and all that, it's time we just jump right into our thoughts. So I'm going to actually throw it to whichever one of you guys wants to start with our overall thoughts on the One Piece live action experience here.
Do we want to talk about this in general, or do we want to go chronological, or how do we want to go, like, straight up, just say our rating up front?
Like, how was your overall feeling?
Yeah.
Like, let's start out with overall for the live action.
Overall feeling, I was pleasantly surprised because my expectations were very low. That's at the gist of it. It was that my biggest fear was, how are they going to adapt close to 100 chapters and 8 episodes? And it looks like they did about 2 episodes an arc for the East Blue Saga, covering from Romance Dawn all the way to right before Loguetown. So the story of the One Piece live action covered everything up until right after Arlong Park's stuff, with the iconic scene with the barrel, with the crew shouting their dreams and whatnot. My thoughts overall, I liked it. Obviously, it's not the best series in the world. I thought it was okay, and I think being okay is well above what I ever expected for any anime live action. In my opinion, it is one of the better. I can't think of many others besides, like, the Rurouni Kenshin stuff that people talk about that I have not watched, but I have heard that one is probably the GOAT live action adaptations. But as far as
might have to do an episode on
live
that.
Action adaptations come. Right. As far as live action adaptation from Western studios comes, I feel like this is by far the best one. I don't know if you guys would agree with that notion or not.
Yeah. Overall, I mean,
Cowboy Bebop is right there, but
Okay. We haven't even seen that. We hear bad things about Cowboy Bebop.
I saw it.
Yeah. But One Piece, I guess what I liked, overall, I would agree with Saeed. Overall, I liked it a lot. There were different scenes, and we can go kind of a play-by-play over highlights for the show in a little bit. But overall, I think that it had a lot of heart. Like, I could tell that there was a lot of care put into the cast, the characters, the overall feeling of the show, the action, which was a little lacking in terms of the action department, but it was grounded in realism, so it made sense why they did what they did.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I liked the feeling of the show. It felt like it respected the source material, and that is better than 90% of any other live action ever made.
Yeah, they got the core of the series, I guess, down packed, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Well, like you said, there was the action. There were some cool moments, obviously, but I don't know if we want to jump into it. But I feel like some of the fights end a little quick.
Yeah, pretty quick. I just want to reiterate the point that I made that I think you guys would agree with me on back in the spoiler-free episode. That, because I agree with everything you guys said about feelings toward the show, but I want to reiterate the idea that if this was somebody that is not into anime and not into manga and has no interest of continuing to watch One Piece or only intends to watch the live action, this did a great job of actually representing One Piece.
Like, yeah, and I can
fear
speak...
I feel like
oh go ahead
oh I was just gonna say the big fear I feel like, which we've talked about how many times, and we see with things like Death Note or Ghost in the Shell or Dragon Ball Evolution or something, is a lot of quote-unquote like normies that aren't really anime fans walk away with it being like that's their impression of the franchise.
Right.
And it's a shame that a lot of those series, that's the only impression of the franchise people have, whereas with One Piece, it's like, no, that's... I mean, I have nitpicks that we're going to get into.
Right.
That, you know, as a One Piece fan, I kind of question. But as a whole, like, you walk away with this, if this is the only One Piece media you consume is the Netflix live action, like, nah, it did its job, you know?
Yeah. And I can speak anecdotally from what I've seen online. There's been quite a few people I've seen that are actually interested in checking out One Piece now that either... In the past, they only saw, like, the Four Kids stuff, or they read it a long time ago and never stuck with it, and then watching this reinvigorated them wanting to go back into the series, or people that straight up just haven't touched the manga or anime wanting to try it out now. And funnily enough, week two, worldwide, One Piece is still number one on Netflix. And, like, overall, online streams and whatnot, number one, that show, the live action. But also, the... One Piece anime is number four worldwide. Not on Netflix, but like worldwide streaming in general.
That's what I was curious about. I was wondering how many people that have seen the show went on to continue to watch the anime. So that's cool to know.
Yeah, and I actually have a personal experience from that because I was sitting at the airport waiting to come back from a weekend hanging out with some friends up in Connecticut. And one of my coworkers sent me a meme on Instagram because he had just finished watching the live-action One Piece. And it was a scene from the anime of, like, Luffy crying or something. I don't exactly remember which one, but the caption was from the meme he sent. It was, when you realize there are over 1,000 episodes of One Piece you have to watch now that you're interested in the series. And I was like, hey, you know? And this dude doesn't watch anime. He doesn't do any of that. So... It seems, and hearing what you just said, Saeed, it seems like it's working, which is what they said the point the whole time was to get people that weren't into anime into One Piece.
And fun quick fact, they already have a roadmap for season two. I think the script's already done for season two, but because of this whole writer strike going on, they're holding off on moving forward, obviously. But they're ready to film. They said whenever the strikes and everything are settled, in 12 to 18 months, they'd be ready to produce a product.
Jeez.
That's exciting.
They got the writing exciting. And stuff down, like the scripts and stuff down, which is probably one of the biggest hurdles from the previous thing, because the scripts are always back and forth with Oda, so I'm assuming similar to season one, these scripts are back and forth with Oda as well. But I've also saw that they have a roadmap down for up to season six, but they would like 12 seasons if possible, if Netflix wanted them 12? To do it. That's what they said. That's what I saw
that's
on Twitter.
That's real interesting. They
have a roadmap for six, but they would like 12, something like that.
I hope they just Lord of the Rings it and they film it all back to back to back, you know?
Because that would be smart if you're going for 12. Like, I think we talked about it in the previous episode. It would almost make more sense to kind of have a send off at the Alabasta point. Because as you go further into the series, it gets more and more fantastical.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really cool to see as a fan and as someone who's experienced the show. And it would be cool in a live-action adaptation, but your budget is going to get huge. Oh. It has to be massive.
Yeah.
And also, I think that's a perfect segue, Demetrius, into, because this is the spoiler episode, into the spoiler talk. Because if they were to do that many seasons, what would be interesting would be to see how some of the changes that came about in One Piece live action would affect the story long term. So this is, I mean, it's the spoiler episode. So if you're listening to it, you're expecting
now,
spoilers.
Yeah. Now we're going, but now we're going to talk about spoilers.
You
were, everything
would
before
be
this was pretty vague. So
yeah. Now would be the time. So boys, spoiler time. I'm just going to throw it to you guys. Uh-huh. Plot points you were surprised about.
Garp?
Things that you saw? Yeah, let's start with Garp. That's a huge
change. Yeah, that's
change
the biggest.
Right off the bat.
The Garp Kobe Helmeppo storyline was the biggest change from the manga and anime, because in the manga, all we got was some cover stories with like little lighthearted, nothing in-depth stuff about what Kobe and Helmeppo were doing with Garp. But in the live action, it was like almost a good portion of each episode was dedicated to them, that group.
Mm-hmm. Which was really cool to see.
Yeah, I liked it because I was like, oh, this is new content for me, a veteran of One Piece. I'm like, oh, this is cool to see. Because, funnily enough, Helmeppo and Kobe were some of my favorite characters in the live action.
Yeah.
No, Helmeppo especially, I don't know why.
They were
Helmeppo was really,
really well.
Yeah. The only thing I question about that storyline, I liked it overall, but the only thing I question is, I guess, Garp in a way? Kind of, sort of?
Mm-hmm.
So, was just a little confused. Because Garp didn't seem like Garp.
He was more serious.
Out of everyone, out of everyone casted, I feel like the portrayal of Garp in the live action was by far the most different. Well, Garp and Mihawk were probably the most different in my eyes.
Ooh, Mihawk too. That was an interesting one.
I like the Mihawk one. I was like, okay, this is a different Mihawk, but at least he's fun. He's fun to watch on screen and stuff like that. But the Garp, I'm not saying the Garp was bad. It was just neither of them were bad because the acting was fine, I guess. It's just the depiction of what the character was in the source material was the most different for Garp and Mihawk.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, Garp's whole, and maybe you'll agree with this, Demetrius, I'll throw it to you here, but Garp's depiction, it felt like, you know, early One Piece is very much, let's gather the crew, let's go from island or location to island or location, and get the crew together, and there's not really a big overarching villain in it. In a way, you could say in the live action, I mean, Arlong is doing things in the background in the source material. And in a way, in the live action, you can say that Arlong is kind of the presence, like the big villain presence that's in the background. You see him show up after the whole Buggy thing. You see him show, or you see all that stuff happen at Baratie. like, he's, I guess, what you could call the villain in the live action that's going throughout. But Garp was the much more upfront
antagonist,
quote unquote, yeah. antagonist of yeah. this. It felt like they needed somebody to play that role, and because of the fact that they had, you know, the blessing of, you know, foresight into future events and hindsight into what Oda had kind of written, you know, like, let's throw the fact in that Garp is Luffy's grandfather early. Let's cut way to some early. Of Luffy's stuff
very
super
early.
Early. Like, let's cut to Luffy and Garp interactions early. Let's make it so that Garp looks like the concerned grandfather type of character that wants his son to be, or his grandson, excuse me, to be a Marine instead of a pirate, and put it much more out front and make him much more serious of a character. Which, to what you said, Saeed, it felt different. Like, Garp, to me, felt almost the most different. I get mm-hmm. the story behind him, and in a way, it does match his feelings to a certain extent in the source material, but that was the one where I'm like, this is very interesting with how they're handling yeah. it. So I'll throw it to you on that, Demetrius.
Yeah, like, you guys are pretty much nailing it, because that's kind of how I felt watching Garp. It was, I think what was cool about what they portrayed about Garp once I finally understood his Scottish accent, cool dude, yeah. great yeah. depiction. However,
he looked cool. He looked like Garp yeah, in real
he
life.
He looks yeah. like Garp. The big thing for me is, like you guys said, he was a lot more serious, and they showed kind of a few moments where he was like, he almost looked crazy, right?
Yeah.
Even though that's kind of what Garp in the manga and anime, he's more of like he's more of the happy-go-lucky. You can see the cross between him and Luffy in terms of, like, we're just going to make it happen. We're going to laugh it yeah. off. It is what it is. This guy kind of made him look like a maniac. But they also, yeah. in a way, captured what Garp is kind of like. Because even if you think about it, he is kind of crazy considering everything that's going on. But they made it a little bit more manic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if I'd have to go back and like re-look at all the Garp scenes in the anime and the manga, but he felt to me in this series a lot more into the Marines than he did in the source material, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he felt a lot more like the stickler and the by-the-book hard-nosed Marine in this. Then right. when he, you know, shows up after everything that happens at...
Because he is not by the
Water
book.
Seven and... Yeah, Water 7 in Enies Lobby and is just, like, kind of a goof and doesn't really care yeah. about, you know...
The whole thing, yeah.
Some That's the other interesting
the
part. There was
Marines
a,
and stuff.
That was an interesting part related to what you just said, because in the live action, there was a scene where he straight up says, I could have been fleet admiral by now, but I kept denying the promotion because then I would have to play by yeah. their rules. But I'm like, okay, you're saying this, and this is canonically correct. This is what Garp is like, and this is what Garp basically said at one point. But your actions don't represent mm-hmm. what you're saying.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, I mean, and also, Garp, I found his obsession with tracking Luffy very uncharacteristic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they had to change him especially to, like, make him the overarching, like, looming threat, basically.
Yeah. I have a feeling going forward they probably will dial it back.
They're probably gonna pivot.
Won't be in the next season. Yeah, it's going to be Smoker.
Yeah, you saw the pivot at the end of credit scene. Yeah. It'll be Smoker.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be Smoker, which I am excited
Smoker?
For. The actor?
Who's what?
Oh, who knows?
Oh, who is Smoker?
Yeah. I don't know who Smoker is. No.
Nicolas Cage, baby. Let's go.
Yo. Oh, man. It's just going to be Garp's actor, just different looking.
But yeah, besides Garp, the other character that's the most different, in my opinion, is Mihawk. Mihawk is a lot more zesty in this, and I'm not mad yeah. at
you.
Is he not yeah. more zesty?
I mean, I
that's a way to describe it for sure.
Yeah, that's a different zesty. Way.
He's a lot more talkative and not as monotone. But it works. I don't know why that works for me, but the Garp stuff didn't work for me. I liked Mihawk a lot. He's more he's way more sarcastic, which I kind of liked. Like, it was pretty funny.
Yeah, he speaking on the Zesty comment, he was a lot more like sarcastic and everyone is beneath me kind of way. It was interesting they made like Garp called on him to find Luffy.
Yeah, yes. I was just about to say that early relationship between the Marines and the Warlords popping up there. That was another one where I'm like, that's interesting. That's interesting.
They're trying to establish all the rules real fast, I feel
like. Yeah. What was interesting for me, and Saeed, I'm really deferring to you because you're the resident expert here. But when you have, in the story, it's always inferred, you know, that the world government and the warlords kind of work together. However, in the story that I've read and seen, it's more like they kind of just stay out of each other's way. In this live action depiction, it's more that I guess that they work for the world government directly, almost.
On paper, in the show and manga, they do work for, they're kind of like mercenaries for the world government. It's basically what they said in the show is kind of basically correct, because in Marineford, that's basically what the world government requested the warlords to do, is to show up to fight for the world government against Whitebeard. So I guess
F off sometimes, though.
It's like, that's the other thing. On paper, that's all well and dandy, but in reality, they never really bothered showing up, and the world government was like, and just ignored them, basically.
They'll show up, they'll come. I know they'll be here.
Yeah. And with the whole Mihawk Garp interaction there, I mean, it does just kind of, it's kind of like what you were talking about with Garp Demetrius having to be that overarching guy. It does just kind of fit into the structure of trying to establish a narrative. Having me, like, if you just have Mihawk randomly show up, kind of like he does in the manga, right? Like, who is this guy? It doesn't really serve anything other than to further Zoro wanting to be, you know, hitting that wall for the first time. But here, it's one of those changes where it's like, I guess it does make sense for them to do.
I feel like
do.
It works. It's
like
just
all the changes
different.
Yeah, on paper, all the changes I feel like were made within the rules, like you were saying, Simon. Yeah. Like that's technically something that could happen.
Because another one of my, another thing I liked about the whole Mihawk thing, because since Garp told him to go get Luffy, I feel like there's a stronger, I guess, connection between Luffy and Mihawk than there is in the manga and anime. And going to the last episode of the live action where Mihawk shows up to Shanks' island or wherever Shanks is partying or whatever, that interaction got elevated to a certain degree because of the history, I guess, the history depicted in the live action between why Mihawk was going after Luffy and all that, and what Mihawk said about Luffy, how he thinks maybe he could be the one to get the One Piece and stuff like that, which is not what Mihawk said anywhere remotely, I don't think ever, in the manga or anime.
Nope.
Yeah. It was cool. I think it was wise, personally, that they wrote out Don Krieg.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was like, that was
But they included our man Jin. He still made it into
Jin.
The show.
that was an interesting choice.
Where's Johnny and Yosaku, though, too, you know?
Where's Hachi, man?
Pirates. Or Hachi.
Hachi was
that's
like,
the
where's
one.
Hachi?
Yeah, no,
that's
Hachi.
The one. Later on.
Yeah, Hachi,
what are
personally,
they going to do if they ever get to Sabaody?
Yeah, that was the one that I was like, yo, no Hachi? Come on, bro. You got to have Hachi.
Yeah, because if they do intend to have multiple seasons while we're on this, I guess you could just have Hachi show up at Sabaody and just be a guy that they befriend.
Or that they quote-unquote fought, you know? Like he was cannon fodder, but I don't know.
That was the one where I'm like, I don't. Like, there were a lot of decisions that this show made that felt like they were trying to set it up for a longer run, but there were also some decisions that they made, like excluding Hachi, where I was like, maybe it's not as far-sighted as they're thinking about, in a way.
They said 12 seasons. I'm like, That's far.
That's huge.
That is far.
Unless they just completely write Hachi out, in which case, yo.
Oh, by the way, another thing I liked about the live action, I really wanted to bring it up last time, is I guess there's actual death being depicted on characters that aren't dead in the anime and manga that might as well be dead because they're not relevant at all. Like in the Cirrus Village arc, the goat guy. I forget the name.
Yeah, Mary.
Oh, Mary.
Mary. Yeah. Oh, duh. Of course.
You
Mary.
Forget
Mary
Mary's
actually,
name? What?
Mary actually what? Died. Mary actually died.
I didn't think he was going to die. And then I was like, oh, he might be dead.
You know what this tells me? Pell is going to die. He's going to stay dead. I guarantee you.
Bro,
I hope
so much.
He's going to
stay
dead.
But here's the thing, though. Again, this is one of those things where if Pell dies, isn't he at the Reverie later on, though? With Vivi? Super
late
in
the series? But he doesn't play any major role.
Yeah, kill him.
Who knows?
I promise you because... No. I promise you he's going to die because also the head writer, because he's been on a lot of live streams with other One Piece content creators, he mentioned that one of the biggest things he didn't like about Alabasta was Pell surviving. I'm pretty sure if I'm remembering correctly.
Bro, I don't like Pell surviving. That was... It slaps the face of the whole, like, crisis of the situation. If this Birdman can survive a bomb at point-blank range, it wasn't going to do squat to any of fighting in the city.
I'm saying if they killed Mary and they didn't even have Hachi in it, Pell's disposable. He's not relevant at all after the Alabasta arc.
Outside of just showing up to Reverie with Vivi as, like, a bodyguard that apparently probably didn't even do anything.
Yeah, it means more. The one thing that detracts from One Piece for me is when a sacrifice isn't real, or it's like, oh, just kidding, I'm fine. That it kind of spits in the face of whatever happened.
Right.
Yeah, I did like when they got the Mary and they name it the Going Mary.
Mary after the guy who died. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's cool. That's cool. It did add weight. Who was it? Mr. Seven that we just hear about. Speaking of depicting death, Demetrius, when you and I watched it, that guy got cut in half. We're like, whoa.
Yeah. The black guy died first. Come on, bro. Like, really?
That is
again?
Canon, but
again,
that was an actual canon event.
Canon event.
Yeah, but that wasn't depicted in the manga or anime. It was just talked about that Zoro killed Mr. Seven.
Shout out to Spider-Man 2099.
Zoro not defeating the Minority Hunter accusations with that
mm-hmm.
one.
Just feeding them.
But besides all that, I think most of the arcs, I'm surprised. As I said earlier, it was 2 episodes per arc. First arc was fine. The Buggy arc was fine. I feel like all the arcs were pretty fine. I feel like the flashbacks were done fairly well, especially Sanji's one, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was done... It was done in a way that I've seen in other shows like A Game of Thrones or The Last of Us that it made it... You could get to know a character in an episode or two. Really, mm-hmm. one episode. And it felt like you knew the character then. You understood their motivations.
Right.
Yeah, the example I go back to with that is early on in the series, we get Luffy's flashback in piecemeal, right? And when he's getting drowned by Buggy, that's when we get the flashback of Shanks saving him from the Sea King and drowning. And
that was one of the coolest scenes in the whole show.
Yeah, that was really cool.
It was sweet. And, I mean, let's talk about it. Hockey early on.
Oh, yeah. They did depict Conqueror's hockey in, like, episode 2. And, by the way, Shanks, I know we talked about Mihawk. I feel like Shanks, I liked him.
Yeah,
in the flashback,
I liked him better when
he
didn't have the hat on.
Right, I was just about to say when he took off the hat, he looked a lot better. And at the last episode where he had a hangover at the island, I feel like okay, this guy is Shanks. I could see it.
It's canonically Shanks. He's like, I don't want to fight you now that you're half a man. He's like, I could still take you. I was like, yes, okay, they got this right.
He just looked goofy.
The
with
dynamic
the, with the
is
hat
good.
On.
The dynamic between him and Mihawk is good.
I'm not gonna lie, Buggy was cool. I like how they translated Buggy into the series.
He stole the show.
Yeah, he did.
He was probably my favorite character in the show.
those changes with Buggy too, keeping him in, because what, Luffy, like, in the series, they have the whole battle at, where is it, Orangetown or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then Buggy gets his own cover stories of trying to get back to his body, but using Buggy as kind of the introduction into Arlong, like the whole hiding his ear in the Straw Hat and all that thing, and tracking him. I was like, you know what? It is pretty cool how they're integrating him, especially because I feel like the actor did a really cool job of depicting him.
Yeah, Buggy, without being an Buggy absolute still joke. Has Buggy still has that like mischievous, quote unquote, you know, flipping you off attitude.
Mm-hmm.
It works. I'm not gonna lie. I ended up liking Arlong a lot more than I thought I would.
Yep.
I was like, hey, this is a pretty good depiction. It took me a second to adjust because, you know, going from cartoon form to realism is very strange.
Their heads are too big.
Their heads are huge.
That's the proportions. I think is what I was like. There's like. The prosthetic looks good. Like, if it's just the headshot, I'm like, okay, this looks good. But I'm like, what's throwing me off? I'm like, oh, it's the body with the head. That's what's throwing me off.
That's going to be what
the face makeup and everything. Forward. The face makeup and everything, like, okay, it looks good on its own if you ignore the body, but the body didn't match with the head.
Yeah, true. I was like, this is interesting, like, depiction of the Arlong Park. Like, though they're partying with... I think I watched it with subtitles on at that point, and it was like... hip-hop beats or something. I was like, okay, interesting depiction.
Hip-hop They're, beats with the actor of Arlong being black, bro.
Yeah, I was like, okay,
they were being very I guess how do I describe it, heavy-handed with what the allegory supposed to be with the fish
meat. Exactly. Yep. I'm glad you poetically said that, because that's the best way it could be said.
Showrunner is African American.
Oh, it's okay. Mm-hmm. Hey, you could just say black. It's okay. It doesn't hurt my feelings.
Okay.
But I really liked Arlong. I liked how he was not zesty, as we would call Mihawk, but he was very. He had an attitude, and it worked.
Yeah, he was kind of scary. I know. I'm trying to imagine myself as a kid watching. I'm like, would I be scared of this guy? Maybe.
This dude said, again, I'm just getting started, darling. And I was like, that sold it for me. That's Arlong, 100%.
And again, the interactions with Buggy early on, like establishing Arlong early on, I thought was...
I thought that was a great
threatening
change.
Feeling. It was, yeah, it was threatening feeling. Because Buggy, East Blue, you have the whole... Yeah, he's like the East Blue. I hear like you were talking trash about being the guy running. He's like, we all know who runs the East Blue here.
And I was like, and that's the one thing the East Blue Saga and the manga and anime didn't have. There was no through line. Each arc was almost isolated to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the only sagas in One Piece that's isolated. Everything else after this there's a connecting through line. When we're getting into the next season and the Alabasta Saga, there's a through line in Vivi. Vivi's the through line that's connecting where the crew's going to be going. And then after that, obviously, I guess the Skypiea is a little different. But then after that, it's like Water 7 stuff and so on and so on.
The sprinkling of little Easter eggs for people that know the anime and manga was beautiful. When Nami was telling Zoro about Nolan the Liar when he was asleep, I was like, oh my gosh, this is great.
They got the details down pack.
Mm-hmm. And here's a question for you, talking about through lines. Thought on Baroque Works being kind of a
that was
focus
smart.
A little more.
That was definitely smart.
That was very smart. It was throughout the entire show. I think from episode one they were mentioned multiple times. And Zoro's thing with Mr. Seven, with also with Garp.
Garp.
They were tracking Baroque Works before he pivoted to Luffy.
Mm-hmm.
Then the big bads of the next season is going to be Baroque Works.
Dude, Crocodile's going to be so cool.
I hope so.
Hey, did you catch that one time that Arlong did his laugh? He did like the sha ha ha. Like, I'm interested to see how they're gonna hit that crocodile laugh, if they can, because that was an interesting one.
And speaking of, you know, going back to the Arlong Park thing and, you know, the entirety, I guess, of the show, Saeed, you talked about it a little bit before. What are our thoughts on the action scenes here?
I feel like the action scenes with Zoro were fantastic. Yeah, and yep. Sanji were pretty fantastic. Mm-hmm. Everything practical related.
He was doing the kicks in real life.
He was doing the kicks? Yeah. It was like the actor dedicated himself, Sanji's actor, dedicated himself to actually learning how to fight with his legs. And it shows. And yeah. The Zoro actor is also very good with stunt work and sword work before he came on here. So it translated. It's a good thing because the Zoro stuff early on in the first few episodes was really cool to see, especially that bar scene in the mm-hmm. Marine base. It was pretty cool. But the low point of the action was always the Luffy fights, in my opinion.
Yep, totally.
Because I feel
agree.
Like they were limited in the choreography stuff because of the effects that they were going to have to put into the stretching. Because I feel like all the Luffy fights were anticlimactic to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. The Gatling was cool against Arlong. Oh, this is cool. I wish it lasted a little longer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's almost like the Luffy fights, because he is rubber, I get it. He ate gum fruit, gotcha. However, what made the other fights like a Zoro, a Sanji, an Usopp, a Nami fight
shout out
cool.
To Usopp, by the way.
Yeah, shout out to Usopp, my guy.
I really liked his live action character. Yeah.
He captured Usopp. The cast was amazing. Yeah.
Especially because Usopp's one of my favorite characters. So like,
and the chemistry, amazing for all the characters. But Luffy's fight scenes were kind of like one-dimensional just because it's almost like they told the actor to not move. Like, hey, do a gum pistol and just like stand in place and like punch the air.
Mm-hmm.
That was his main thing. He wasn't very mobile.
Right. He was very... Because Luffy's a very mobile fighter, like in the show and anime, he moves around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But there's slapstick elements to it too during his fights.
Yeah, but in the show, he's a little bit more cerebral, because in the buggy fight, it was his idea to put Buggy's arms and stuff into the crates in the live action. And
how about the Kuro
against
fight?
Kuro? Yeah, against Kuro, he pulled what he did against Katakuri. He just closed his eyes and he's like, "Okay, I'm gonna hear where you are."
Yeah.
And he's like basically a gum python when he doesn't do one of those type of moves until way later on, where he like stretches and like redirects his arm to another spot.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, that's cool to see. He's smarter. He's a smarter fighter in the show from what I can see so far, but he's not as mobile.
Yeah.
I prefer the mobility because it looks cooler.
Yeah,
it's a little element they can improve on.
Yeah, and I feel like, to what you were saying, part of the fun of Luffy's fights in the beginning is the inexperience it feels like he has in the source material. It's like every fight he kind of has to figure out a new way to utilize his Devil Fruit powers to get the win, because he doesn't have all the haki, he doesn't have the wide array of techniques he has, he doesn't have all the different gears, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but this did just really feel like he. I don't want to say he was a one trick, but it's like Luffy is going to punch somebody.
Yeah,
and that's gonna be.
He's gonna brute force his way until he's like his unwavering will and just brute force it until it gets done.
Yeah, did he? Did he do any of the gum whip at all? Do you guys remember any of that?
Did he do it in the Marine base with the kick?
Do you mean the live action? Because in the live action, he did do the whip against Morgan's.
Okay. Because I feel like that was one thing he used. Yeah, he used it. I thought he used it more in the beginning.
He did, but the thing is, they didn't give an opportunity, I guess, for like more group combat. Like, you know how in the show, in the manga, a lot of times like Marines or other pirate crews would come rush them, like fodder would come rush them, and then they would showcase some of their abilities that way, like the whips, to get rid of like a bunch of them all at once. That didn't present itself in the live action, because usually Luffy's confrontations were one-on-ones. I don't think there was many, or if any,
group ones besides the one in the first episode.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Because that's another thing. That's the funny thing. The first episode, I feel like that's when Luffy's combat was at its best.
Yeah, when he's running around and you have the dynamic camera actions. And yes. Him and Zoro are teaming up with things. Like, that felt like...
Yeah, that was actually good.
Translated to page.
I almost completely forgot. Page to screen. Because mm-hmm. the last thing I saw was the Arlong fight, which in my opinion, it was ended real
too
quick.
Short.
It was too very short.
Too short. Way too short. Not enough actual fighting.
Well, here's another complaint, if I can interject real quick. Mm-hmm. My other complaint about the fights, especially for Luffy, is, and this is just nitpicking, it's not like a huge detractor of the show, but Luffy's fights, he's always getting really beat up, like every single time. And it never felt like he was severely threatened in his fights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it kind of started with the Alvida fight, right, in the live action, where she, and I think that goes to what, that's a great add-on to what I was saying about he had to figure out ways to win early on in East Blue in the source material, but, like, the Alvida fight in live action starts, and he gets hit by her, like, giant iron mace or whatever, and he gets hit by her Kaido weapon.
Yeah.
And
hey, Alvida's basically Big Mom and Kaido combined.
Yeah,
their love child.
Alvida secretly secretly part of the Charlotte family or whatever it is. But like he gets hit in the head there, and it's like, oh yeah, they use that as the introduction to he's made out of rubber and blunt force stuff can't hit him. And then he gets what cut once in the fight against Kuro on his chest, and that's when he decides to be like, okay, I'm gonna close my eyes and I'm gonna listen. And I mean. I didn't even really think about the whole beat-up thing until you mentioned it, Demetrius. Look at the Arlong fight in the manga and anime.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a struggle.
Yo, he straight up almost got cut to pieces, really, in multiple different aspects.
Yeah.
He struggled in that fight, and this time it didn't really feel like that.
They basically took the three-act structure of a fight from the manga and anime for the Arlong-Luffy fight. They cut out acts 1 and 2 to a certain degree, even though they did, I guess, have more of a fight in Baratie. That was their round one. But the Arlong Park fight on its own was basically a condensed version of the last third of the Luffy Arlong fight. Because in the last third, usually in Luffy fights, that's when Luffy gets to the point where he's like, okay, I can outdo the opposing opponent. And that's when the crowd's like, oh yeah, he can do it now. Because the first two acts, usually he struggles very hard, and it's building up to that point, but that build up in those fights wasn't there. It just went straight to Luffy domination,
which is rough, because I thought like this Arlong had everything going for him. The threatening presence throughout the whole thing, the actor did an incredible job, I thought, of depicting Arlong. He was a threat, just not really in the fight, you know?
Yeah.
I would have loved to see him really beat up on Luffy.
We didn't see him Arlong feel attacks, like it. Did we? I don't think so. He just
earned
was
win.
Throwing punches.
Not really.
Shark on darts. I wanted to see a man just fly at another man.
That dude. See, but that's the type of thing where I'm like, I wish that was there. Like you said, people hear it and they might think it's goofy. But that's kind of the aspect of the One Piece live action that I feel like wasn't there as much. Purposefully so, of course. They wanted to make it more serious.
Right.
But some of the more goofy aspects, I'm like, come
one
on.
Of the coolest they things never... Arlong did action-wise was with his sword, his little sword.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, little sword, big sword, before it was broken.
Before it was broken in the manga and anime, he did the whole somersault thing in the air, like trying to cut up people. It was, I don't know. And then here, he just brought it out. He tried to swing it. Luffy grabbed it, which was part of the anime and manga. But like I said before, the other stuff before with the sword didn't happen. It just went straight to Luffy being able to block the sword and break it before Luffy had to struggle with him with the sword.
And again, I understand why they made the decisions that they had to, but they didn't. They showed that he could grow back his teeth really fast. I was like, okay, that's pretty creepy. Got it. Looks even crazier in a real sense.
Yeah.
But they didn't showcase anything else of his sharkness, you know what I'm saying? Like, him biting things with crazy bite force.
Now, could it be that the whole reason in all of these fights that Luffy didn't truly feel threatened is because they were really trying to set him up as a character, as being similar to what you said with you brought up with Mihawk at the very end, Saeed, pretty much being like he could be the one to find it. Like, they're trying to set Luffy up to be that superstar. Right?
Potentially, because I would also argue in the manga and anime, Luffy doesn't really struggle that bad, and he doesn't have a very big loss for a very long time. Even throughout the East Blue Saga, he doesn't really lose ever until we get to Crocodile, is when he has his one big major loss. Because I remember this very vividly, because I'm like, oh god, the moment where Crocodile stabs Luffy and is holding him up, and it's just a silhouette panel. I'm like, oh my goodness, what's going to happen now? Because we've never seen Luffy in this predicament before. Maybe they're building up to something like that, if I would have to guess.
Luffy felt more monolithic in this series, if that made sense. If that makes sense. Like, he felt like the force. Ringer.
Yeah, he felt like a force more than a character, I guess. Which kind of is Luffy in a way.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Luffy's hard to describe translate.
That is Luffy, though. He's kind of the force of dreamers. Like, he collected this band of dreamers and made them a crew.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would give kudos to the live action for, because they did depict that aspect of Luffy being, like, a force, which I didn't know how they would do. And they did ground Luffy. I will give them that, too. Outside of the action, Luffy in the live action was a lot more grounded than in the show, in my opinion. A lot more serious. Not as serious as Garp. I guess... not as serious as Garp, obviously, but, like, way more serious and way more concerned, I guess.
Yeah, he...
Way more aware. Everyone's stuff.
Yeah, he reflected on his own actions at Baratie. I remember that. I was like, wow.
I like that, though.
Yeah, it made... It, again, translating from a cartoon medium to a real medium, it made it real in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was cool.
And it kind of, to again what all you guys were saying, it felt almost necessary to present him that way, considering the demographic it was trying to hit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think, again, explains a lot of choices. Like, why we don't see some of Arlong's attacks, right?
Or Richie the Lion.
Which, they brought up. That was funny.
Yeah, they did.
Where's the lion? One of Buggy's, the lion dude with Buggy.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about him.
Yeah, that's they brought him up. I mean, they had the, like, what, the flash scene of Buggy talking to the dude in the outfit.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, it's him. But, I mean, there are some things that I will have to concede, despite being a fan of One Piece.
All the villains were done very well. I'm thinking back. Buggy was excellent. Kuro was really good, in my opinion. In the
Clahador? Clahador?
Yeah, Clahador.
Clahador?
Clahador?
Clahador. Claw the door. Claw the door.
But,
and like we said before in the other previous or the last episode, the sets were incredible.
Yeah, I was just about to say. Beautiful. They're still the one that I can't get over. You know exactly the one. Mary's head, dude.
Yeah, we know
you
don't like the Mary head. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can't do it. But when they got to Baratie, and you see it from a distance, and the fog clears, and you see the whole thing, and they're in... I was like, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Even Arlong Park looked cool.
It did.
And I like that in the show, in the live action, they made it seem more like a theme park than...
Yeah,
in the anime and manga, because as we know in the future, why Arlong Park is called Arlong Park and the reasoning for Arlong Park is very deep rooted in some very emotional stuff for the fishermen.
Yeah,
in Sabaody Archipelago, in the park in Sabaody Archipelago, trying to mimic it, because that's something that the fishermen always wanted to be able to go to. Oh, Fishman Island.
It's so interesting. I thought. And after our last conversation, when I kept watching the show, I was listening to see if there was any standout soundtracks. And they did the remix for...
Oh, my God.
What was it?
I teared up.
It was an opening? I can't remember exactly what it was.
They did the remix for We Are when they get on the Mary. And I was That's what it was.
Yo, I felt so emotional hearing that.
Yeah, it was crazy. Because it was at the end, too. I can't believe they did it.
That cut up, too, that shows it's Zoro going into the room to sleep on the hammock. It's Nami looking at the Navigator stuff. Luffy was on the mat or on the head of Mary. Usopp is just kind of going around. And the song is playing. And I was like, yo, this is sick.
They captured the feeling so well of what the early days felt like.
Mm-hmm.
And they had that original song, My Sails Are Set. My Sails Are Set. That's how it is. Say that five times fast.
That, by the way, I don't know if you guys stuck around for the credit scene for the, I think it was after Arlong Park ended. There was a song, basically a Nami song. The song was kind of cool. Like an actual vocal song about basically Nami. It was a good song.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'll have to listen to that. I don't know if I caught that one.
Also, on the topic of Nami, probably the scene in the East Blue Saga, Luffy putting the hat and getting the squad ready to go. What do we think about that in live action?
I thought it was, for me, it was cooler when he said it quieter.
Yeah.
Before he did the yell. I was like, all right, you know, I don't think the yell was necessary. I don't think that translated as good. But when he said it quietly, and if he had gathered the crew to go after that, I would have been like, Luffy is that guy, period. But he did the yell, and it took me out a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to mention, there was a couple scenes, not just the Nami scene, but it felt like when it got to key moments, also the Zoro scene where he lost a Mihawk, where they try to go panel for panel in the adaptation. And I think that kind of threw me off a little because I go, like, I know what you're trying to do and it's not hitting the same as what you're trying to copy. So I wish they kind of did it. They obviously covered the scene, but they did it in a way that wasn't as mimicky, I guess. Did
that make sense? It felt a lot like if it wasn't shot for shot, it would have been better, basically.
It was very like Scott Pilgrim / Ocean's 11 editing. They did the same thing in the Morgan's fight early on, and that was one of the things that kind of threw me off, where it shows Morgan's and then it and it shrinks his picture.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then and then all of them come up, and it's like, but I mean, what are you gonna do about it, right?
Yeah, I'm not saying it's bad. The scenes weren't bad, but since I have prior knowledge to how it's depicted in both the anime and the manga, I feel like I don't know how to observe the scene outside of the fact that I've seen it already done almost in a masterclass way in the anime and then the manga.
Right.
I don't know how I'm gonna pull myself back and view it with fresh eyes, because I can do that with a lot of the other stuff in the show, but those specific moments are pretty big, so it's tough.
I thought the big moments, when they did come, even though they were a little, like, off and it took you out, they were still done well. Like, Emily Rudd's Nami portrayal in her scene was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And they definitely got the dismissive aspect of Nami correct in terms of, like, you know, no one can help me at all. It's all terrible.
Mm-hmm.
They got that right. They got a lot of the characters right. The chemistry was spot on.
And I kind of like that. Sorry to jump in, but in Arlong Park, Baratie, in the manga and anime, Nami runs away. But in the live action, she decides to stay.
That was a surprise.
Until Arlong comes, and the reason she goes is to try to protect them. It's more clear that the reason she goes is to try to protect them.
And I like that they kind of, they foster like a deeper bond between Zoro and Nami.
People are shipping them in real life too now.
And it was cool.
But yeah, that's a good point.
They are one of the earliest crew members with they are the earliest crew members with Luffy, so it would make sense they kind of know each other a little bit more.
Yeah. Or at least have more experience. Probably on paper the most important crew members to Luffy, on paper and in theory, is Zoro. Yeah, and I mean
the series specific that I think the relationship you just mentioned, Demetrius, was actually really well highlighted in the series specific moments, right? They're going to Baratie. They don't know they're going to Baratie yet, but Luffy is on the head of Mary, and the crew is talking about Garp being his grandfather, and Nami's like, yo, you're his first mate. Like, you go talk.
That's another thing that they did in here. They established outright, concrete, Zoro first mate. I don't think that's ever been done in the anime and manga. It's kept a little ambiguous. And I know a lot of Sanji fans and Zoro fans fought over it for quite a long time. But I feel like this is a soft confirmation because everything had to be approved by Oda. But that, yeah, obviously Zoro is the first mate.
Yeah, he is first mate. Mm-hmm. He is vice captain of the Straw Hat Pirates. So it's cool to see, I guess, all the little moments between him and Luffy where he's kind of saying, like, I got your back until the end.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that interaction when Nami tells him to go talk to Luffy, like you were saying earlier, the whole interaction was very Luffy Zoro.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are you okay? Yeah. Like, yep. You want to talk about it? Nope. You okay?
Good talk.
That's very Luffy Zoro.
Yep. I love, cool. Like, again, the little Easter eggs when he's going through Kaya's mansion and Luffy walks out to go to the kitchen and he sees Zoro and he's like, yo, where are you going? And Zoro's like, well, I was trying to go to the kitchen, but...
Oh, yeah. The subtlety of him being lost was very good.
I was like, hey, they got the little Easter eggs for the fans out there. And I mean, in general, it just... Again, all of the changes felt kind of... Like, they felt intentional... And they felt like they worked within the rules of the series, regardless of whether or not I agreed with them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Garp being so... I mean, Garp was what? At the end of Arlong Park 2? Like...
Yeah, he showed up. The final confrontation, basically, of the saga was Luffy versus Garp.
Yeah.
Which never happened like that, but...
Nope.
It felt correct in the realm of the live action, which I think is a compliment to it. Like, it was a very tight adaptation.
Yeah.
Here. I thought for it was 8 cool. episodes, they did way better than I ever thought they would do.
Yes. Yeah,
8 episodes is so small for the amount of material they had to cover. I'm surprised they somehow figured out a way to do it.
The send off in the final episode where Kobe basically tells Luffy that he's a wanted pirate and says, hey, all this stuff. It felt. I'd never expected anything like that to be in the ending scenes, but it felt wholesome but full. Like, it made the story of East Blue feel complete.
Yes it did.
This is gonna be a really weird comparison, but I was getting like mad Fox and the Hound vibes between Luffy and Kobe the whole time. If anyone remembers that movie, The Fox and the Hound, the old animated Disney movie where the fox is friends with the hound, but then as they grow up and they grow older, they realize they're kind of on two different sides. And even though they want to be friends, it's like, nah, we each have to go our own path. I don't know. I love that movie as a kid. And this whole time, the additions of the Kobe scenes, him at the very end, like you mentioned, Demetrius, him confronting Luffy at Syrup Village, even.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is a relationship that... You see a little bit in the manga, but the addition of the emphasis on Kobe's dream of wanting to be a Marine, coupled with the kind of strictness in the depiction of Garp trying to raise him up to be a Marine, almost like the surrogate Luffy to him.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that adds, if they get that far, it'll be interesting to see, you know,
the Marine later clashes
and other interactions that they have.
I really liked how they did Kobe and Helmeth. I know we already said it.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of... It was cool to see the friendship form, because in the anime and manga, for me, at least in the anime, because I know I watched the anime in the beginning, pretty much the full half of One Piece. I didn't know they were going to be buddy-buddy until they just literally showed it on screen.
Yeah, they just show up.
Yeah, you're like, when did that happen?
Right. Mm-hmm. I thought Hell Malpo's actor acted one of the best in the entire cast of the show.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe it. Like,
you just believe it. His
performance was very believable.
Yeah.
And that, all of that kind of leads up to, I guess, my final like criticism of the show, which I can't even really call a criticism.
Call it a nitpick.
Because we don't know how long this show is going to go on, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it gets to, and this is strictly as a One Piece fan, coming from a One Piece fan, like, I cannot look at the live action series without having my experiences with the anime and the manga in the back of my head. Like, it's really tough for me to do that. And I judge it, you know, on its own merits, and I think it did a really good job. But there are moments that I personally really, really like that are those kind of surprise moments or like shock mm-hmm. moments that mm-hmm. they have to put into the manga because it's a weekly series. So they want the reader to continue reading off of these cliffhangers or mystery moments. The mm-hmm. one being from this series, you know, why did Nami betray them? Like you said, Saeed, here it's a lot more apparent she's trying to protect them from Arlong, whereas in the manga and anime, you straight up, like, there's the whole few chapters where she, like, fake stabs Usopp, and you're like, did you just try to kill Usopp? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And that goes to, in the future, if it gets that far. And again, that's why I say it can't really be a criticism, because I don't know if it's get there, but, like, when Garp shows up, and he's like, I'm here for my grandson. It's like, Luffy? What? And then when, like, the scenes in the manga and anime where they're showing the Marines get there and they're cutting to the faces. Post Enies
Lobby was fantastic because of those, like, what the hell surprise moments.
Yeah, it's like, is that Kobe? Is that Helmeppo?
I'm
like,
curious if straight up next season they're going to just say Dragon's Luffy's dad or something, or allude to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would be,
like,
yeah, because I remember when he just straight up showed up in the show, and you're like, who is this dude?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I guess the mystery aspect is what, the shock and awe mystery aspect, to summarize, is what it's going to be interesting to see if they include that in the future.
Mm-hmm.
They did it once. I will say they did it once when Garp was chasing the boat and Luffy said grandpa.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's how the episode ends.
Yeah, I was like, so they got be continued element there.
Yeah.
But it wasn't every episode.
Yeah. And I mean, again, it goes to just the different forms of One Piece, I guess. Like, here you have an 8-episode, 1-hour-long episode Netflix show aimed at more Western audiences compared to a weekly manga series that is trying to bring up things that you might have forgotten about intentionally. But, like, mm-hmm. that's the way that Oda writes a lot of things. So it's, you know, for me, the amount of hindsight and foresight, the combination of both of those that the writers have moving forward, depending on how long this is going to be a very interesting balancing act that they have to play out.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I have a gut feeling they're going to try to aim for getting through Water 7 to Enies Lobby. Because there's a lot of story elements introduced in the live action early on. There is basically story elements of post-Enies Lobby, if that makes any sense. Because of the heavy incorporation of Garp, Helmeppo, and Kobe. That stuff is basically taken parts of it from post Enies Lobby was put into the live action in East Blue, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I hear what you're saying.
Because I'm curious if that's what they're trying to, if that's what, like, they said they have, like, a roadmap for 6 seasons. If that season 6 is the end of Enies Lobby type thing, maybe, potentially.
Yeah, it's just interesting, like, where does One Piece the Netflix adaptation go from here? And that's the question everyone's going to be asking until more seasons come out.
Right.
Because of the changes, because of the success, but also because of the limitations of it being live action.
So right? Chopper's going to be very interesting.
Hopefully what they Chopper. Do is, I saw a cosplay of Chopper, and a lot of people in the comments were saying, hopefully this is what they do. Because it was just a human, really, that looked more...
Reindeer-ish. It looked
like Chopper. Yeah, like someone, it was a girl who had the black lipstick on her upper lip and the nose and the hat. And it was like, okay, yeah, I can see that being Chopper because she had the fur arm things like to her elbow. And basically like some fur on like her neck. So it looked like Chopper if you just had prosthetics on her legs to make it look like a reindeer, quote unquote.
But Chopper's like a kid, canonically.
Correct. So it's kind of...
Just Detective Pikachu it, you know?
It's tricky.
In a perfect world, the budget being good enough to having it like a Detective Pikachu style, I feel like would be perfect. But that's a lot of money.
That's a lot
just make
of
a,
money.
Just make a practical puppet and CG parts of it with the puppet. You know?
Baby Yoda.
Pull a Star Wars
Baby Yoda
or something. Yeah.
Yeah, but overall, guys, I think it was great. If they go to season six, what you guys are saying, I would say it would have to end somewhere after like a Thriller Bark or a Sabaody Arpeggio.
How do they do Thriller Bark, dude?
It would have to.
If they ever do get to Thriller Bark, they better release it in October.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. But if you're counting the arcs,
that'd be
right?
Fun.
East Blue is season one. Season two would have to be Baroque Works and Alabasta. Season 3 has to be Skypiea. Season 4, well, maybe Skypiea and the... Season 3 might be Skypiea and, like, the Davy back fight. And then Season 4 is, like, Davy back fight, Water 7, Enies Lobby. 5 would be whatever... What is that? Thriller Bark?
Yeah.
And 6 is Sabaody Arpeggio.
Good point. I keep forgetting. Saga-wise, One Piece is... If you break One Piece down by sagas, it's not too long, if you think about it.
A lot happens in... Once you hit Water 7 to Sabaody Arpeggio, it is a thrill ride.
Yeah. Could you stop the series on Sabaody Archipelago, though?
Yeah,
that'd
like,
be like
that
a
would be
down,
really
down turn. It'd be like what the hell?
Maybe
that will force people to go
like
watch the show,
time
though.
Skip. Yeah, pre-time skip that's is why, the optimal stop.
That's why I'm like, how are they going to... Like, where do you end it if you go past Alabasta? Because Alabasta could be, like, the perfect send-off ending. But then if you keep going, you're strapped in. Which it sounds like they're ready
Alabasta
to be.
Or
so.
I can honestly see Water 7 Enies Lobby being a good stopping point, too. Because that's where... A lot of the One Piece fans in general, or the consensus is that's the top arc. In a dramatic sense,
yeah,
that arc would hit. In an action sense, if they can do it well, imagine the live action like viewers not knowing anything about Water 7. That arc has so many plot twists with the obviously CP9 and everything. It'd be crazy.
I want to see who they cast.
One Piece villain.
Who are they going to cast, baby? Like, who are they going to... You know what I'm saying. Who are they going to cast to play her? That's going to be interesting.
Oh. Jamie Lee Curtis.
No. She can be Kureha. She can definitely do Dr.
She said
Kureha.
Oh, man. They nailed the casting for these characters. Man. Yo, how do they do Wapol?
Oh god, good point. Because they're not skipping
Danny,
Drum Island.
Dude, get Danny DeVito to be Wapol.
Yeah, that would
be
hilarious.
That would work. I don't know why that would work.
There's a bunch of goofy characters that I'm just interested to...
Bon Clay, too. I'm very curious.
Now,
hey, he's got to be zesty.
Everything with... Yeah. Yo. There could be some stuff they're going to have to change even more, though. Like, if they ever get to Impel Down, how are they going to do all the certain, what's it called, people?
Okama?
Drag queens.
Yeah, all the Okama people.
But that could,
how are people going to feel?
In the social climate.
Basically drag queens.
If you do it right, yeah, it would work.
Yeah, that is true.
Like you, I could easily see.
There's a drag queen culture. There's a drag queen culture in the zeitgeist already. Yeah. That's established. So but, yep. I don't think Americans would be too taken aback by like a drag queen, I guess, pirate crew, quote unquote.
Yeah, like I could easily see, quote unquote, I could see a character being like, slay queen, like you know it's coming.
RuPaul's whole squad to be that character, that make
the background characters for, yeah, the background crew of it, it could work.
I say
there's
it would
a,
work.
There's a lot of interesting, there's a lot of
Michael B. Jordan stuff. To be Mr. One.
I think
wait, did you say Michael Jordan?
Michael B.
Michael
Jordan.
Michael B. Jordan.
Oh, I thought you said Michael Jordan is Mr. One. I was like, huh?
I want to put out there to kind of wrap my thoughts up on it. I appreciate, I mean, Emily Rudd has been in a lot of stuff, right? Recently. Nothing too huge. And McKenyu has been in a few things. But I appreciate them getting lesser known actors to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
They went with whoever can depict the character the best, actually. They didn't go for, I guess, star power names. Which they easily could have done.
It feels
they didn't do Chris Pratt Mario.
Oh my gosh. It feels like they're all at the same starting point, which plays into the elements of the East Blue, which works perfectly.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah. But everybody, dear listeners, seems like
you want to give our ratings before we end?
Yeah, let's give a rate. Or how are we going to do this? We're going to give it a letter grade? We can give it a out of 10 grade?
1 out of 10.
Ooh.
Out of 10.
Yeah, 1 out of 10.
Oh, man, that's...
Considering... That's let's do this. A 10 is a masterpiece. A 9 is great. Or very close to a masterpiece. An 8 is very good. A 7 is good. A 6 is fine. And below is just like... We're not even going to talk about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. With that, I would probably... If I'm being true to myself and what I like enjoying watching live action wise, I'd probably give it a 7 for me.
That's where I'm at.
Dang, bro. Y'all are dang.
7 to 7.5.
Yeah, wait. In if that we can range. Do 0.5s, if we can do 0.5s, I'm going to give it a 7.5. I'd go 7.5 to 8 almost. Actually.
I'd give it like just based purely on what I enjoyed about it. Considering
it was very
what I
fun.
Was and how fun it felt to me,
yeah.
Even with the nitpicks, I'd give it like an 8.5. I'll probably around a 9.
Oh, ooh. Wow!
I thoroughly enjoyed the show, straight up.
Yeah, I did too. But I think it's very difficult for me to take away. Like I'm comparing this, like I'm not trying to, but I am comparing it to what I already know about the manga and anime. I'm like, I don't know. It's tough for me to completely disassociate with that aspect. That's why I went 7 to 7.5.
Right.
Yeah, I would say 7.5, but to your point, Demetrius, I want to put the little asterisk or the caveat onto there that we've talked about this in terms of video games before.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's bad.
It's like, not.
There is another thing.
People who think 7 is bad, from my point of view, 7 is
still good.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like if I think something's a 7, it's something I would rewatch type thing in my whatever.
Well, actually, I'll change my answer. I'll give it an 8 cuz there was way more things that I loved than things that I thought were nitpicky or not as good.
And the way I'm kind of doing it is in terms of other anime live action from me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like my gold standard of anime live action are the Rurouni Kenshin movies, and even then, those are only like 8.5s for me.
Mm.
Despite
because I'm going,
them and wanting
I'm
to
going based
it.
Off of, I'm sticking this straight up with the grades of the of just straight up, like in person series in general, like a Game of Thrones, a House of Dragons, that type of thing. I'm comparing this One Piece show to those, and I'm giving it a 7 to 7.5, which is pretty good. I'm like, it's impressive. This is an anime live action. I'm giving like a 7 or 7.5 in that same way I grade every other show, like a Breaking Bad and everything like that.
This is one where it's like
I stay in my 8 straight up.
Yeah. Yeah, like even though I would say 7.5, again, I really have to emphasize it's one of those things, and I think it goes for all three of us, despite having, like, even though they're around the same, like that 7 to 8 range between the three of us, it's a show that if someone asked me to watch it, I would recommend it.
Like, yeah, if someone I would rewatch it too. If someone wanted, like, to rewatch it, I'd be like, okay, I'll rewatch it. It was a fun show.
I kind of want to, rewatch it in Japanese, like you were talking about.
Yeah.
Saeed.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, that and the fact that I don't think I've seen a show like this in ever.
Well, it's rare. I'd say most of the live action that we have reviewed, and the Bebop crew can reemphasize this, but most of the live action that we see and is heavily talked about is in movie format. This was a show.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's a different I'm way just to present it that we're not even used to.
I'm talking about straight up just adaptations of anything, like a Stranger Things to a Game of Thrones, like I said before, to a Breaking Bad, The Witcher. The tone of One Piece is very different than what's successful in the mainstream as far as TV shows go. It's I don't know if you guys agree with that or not, but I feel like it's refreshing.
No, Yeah, and I think we touched upon it a little bit in the spoiler-free episode, right? Like, it feels like it captures what makes shonen anime likable to a lot of people, but put it into live action.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For good and for bad, for, like, cheesy and for more serious, like, it did an admirable job at depicting One Piece in live action. And hearkening back to the beginning of this longer episode, Saeed, where you gave your impression on it being, you know, beyond any expectation you had, I think it's safe to say that the years of us talking about the One Piece live action Netflix adaptation have culminated in a genuinely good show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and that is better than anything that we all.
Kudos now, to the showrunners, the actors, the prop casting directors, everybody.
Yeah, everybody that worked on this show put their love and soul into it, and you can see that when you're watching it.
And it's crazy that it came from the same studio that did Cowboy Bebop, because that show is trash.
Same studio, not goodness. Same showrunners and stuff.
Yes. Important to note, which means everybody. We've watched live-action One Piece. I've at least watched live-action Cowboy Bebop, and we've all kind of seen clips of it at the very least. Going all the way back throughout our history of episodes where we've reacted to, you know, news, tidbits, little pieces of information of Netflix live-action adaptations, there remains only one high-profile one left.
Avatar.
And that is
Avatar
The Last Airbender.
Yep.
So, here's hoping, you know, the showrunners disagreed with the creators of One Piece and the Netflix, of Avatar The Last Airbender and the Netflix executives and the original creators left. So, here's hoping that's an okay one, but One Piece has set the bar out of those three that we've talked about in the past pretty damn high. And everybody, you know, if you've watched One Piece, if you have thoughts on it, the live action, the anime, the manga, all the changes, all that, again, you can follow us at Bebop Banter on our Instagram. Comment on the announcement post of this. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know if you have, even if you haven't seen it, if what we've talked about, if you were here listening to the spoiler episode without seeing it, has convinced you to give it a shot. Let us know. We love all your interaction. And again, we really want to thank you. It has been nuts seeing. I text these guys every day looking at our analytics. Like, how is this just continuing to grow? And we really, really appreciate all of you. We look forward to keeping you around, hopefully. And if you like what we do, again, go to our Instagram, Bebop Banter. Click on the link tree. Buy the merch if you want to. Support us on Patreon if you want to. But more than anything, We appreciate you guys hanging out and listening with us. My name was Wes. This was my crew of Demetrius and Saeed, and you guys know what to hit them with.
To be continued.
Bebop don't stop.
Peace.